is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I try to inspire in the kids to believe in themselves, you know, no matter what their dreams are. You know, like I said, it's more than just basketball. You know, a lot of these kids that come in want to be doctors or lawyers or architects, or some of them want to be football players or baseball players. Actually, you know, I had a couple that wanted to be soccer players at my last clinic. So it's more than just basketball. You know, what they take away from, I hope what they take away from my clinic is life lessons and the inspiration to, you know, to look past, you know, their, you know, hardships or their trials or their obstacles, and, you know, help them to overcome, you know, those things, because it's going to happen. Obstacles are going to happen. Hardships are going to happen. Difficulties are going to happen. You can't stop that from happening in your life. But what you can do is always believe that you will be successful, you will achieve, and that you will and can overcome.
NBA veteran and Newtown High School alum William Smush Parker was born with a basketball. Most known for his role as the starting point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers, Smush played for various teams, including the Cleveland Cavaliers, Detroit Pistons, Phoenix Suns, Miami Heat, and the Los Angeles Clippers. Throughout his 16-year professional basketball career, the game of basketball has allowed Smush the opportunity to experience a copious number of countries, cultures, and people, including Greece, China, Russia, the Dominican Republic, Iran, Mongolia, Croatia, Tunisia, Morocco, and Venezuela. These experiences have evoked a passion to use his platform to create a more fair, just world that elevates the humanity in us all. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. You'll help the Hoopheads podcast reach a wider audience, and we'll enter you in our monthly drawing to win an official Hoopheads podcast t-shirt. Get ready to enjoy this episode of the Hoopheads podcast as I talk with NBA veteran Smush Parker.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here, your host, and today we are pleased to welcome to the podcast Smush Parker. Smush, welcome.
Yes, Mike, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're excited to get a chance to talk to you a little bit about your basketball journey and then dig into some of the great things that you're doing today with your Smush Parker Elite program and some of your charity work. So we want to start with how you got into the game of basketball as a kid growing up in New York City. Obviously, a tremendous amount of tradition and great players that have come out of the city. So talk a little bit about how you got into the game as a kid and what made you fall in love with it.
All right. Well, you know, like you said, I'm from New York City. It's almost impossible not to play basketball living in New York. There's a basketball court on every corner. They're like, you know, grocery stores. There's a grocery store on every corner in New York City. So as a kid, I, you know, just grew up, you know, loving the game. My dad played, my mom played. I was always around the sport, always hitting the beat of the ball, hitting the pavement. And, you know, I just, you know, grew to love the game. I grew to, you know, do it. I made it to the NBA. I played overseas 10 years, you know, so I think I'm pretty good at it.
What was your earliest memory of the game? What's the first thing that you remember when you think back to being a little kid? What's the first basketball memory you have?
The first basketball memory is I grew up literally everywhere my dad went to play. He played more basketball than I did. So I was, again, always around the sport, sitting on the sideline, sitting on the bench, watching my dad play with his friends, you know, with his older buddies. And that would be my earliest memories of the game. Every Saturday morning, waking up with my dad early in the morning, 5, 6 a.m., traveling on the train and going to the gym and being on a basketball court by 6 a.m., 6:30 a.m., you know, just watching my dad play.
When did your dad and his friends finally let you get out on the court?
It wasn't until I was about 16, going on 17, that my dad's friends finally allowed me to play the game when I showed myself approved.
Understood. So instead, you're on the playground trying to fight your way into games, you know, as a young kid. So describe what that was like when you're 11, 12, 13, 14, for people who maybe haven't been in that pickup playground basketball culture. of how you have to prove yourself in order to be able to get onto the court as a young kid?
Well, it's a different age, a different culture now. Now they just let anybody play basketball and get onto the court. But when I was growing up, you actually had to, you know, be good. You actually had to have some game to be allowed on the court. If not, you was over on the sidelines, you know, on a half court playing, you know, 21 or, you know, one-on-ones with the other scrubs. But, but you know, in the era of that I grew up where basketball was, you know, considered a man's sport, you definitely had to, you know, come and, you know, bring your game. You had to be tough. You had to have some skill. And you couldn't just be some Joe Smo who shot every time you touched the ball, shot threes from 40 feet away. You just had to have game.
And so what did that, growing up that way, compared to the way kids grow up in the game today? And I've talked to some other people about this, and it's so different from, I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 48. And so I grew up not so much in the city, but I grew up playing on the playgrounds here in Cleveland and trying to find games. And, you know, I wasn't on the AAU circuit and playing in a gym with a coach and a referee and people in the stands. So how do you think that growing up the way you did, playing in pickup basketball games and playing on the playground with all people of different ages and, you know, different skill levels and all that stuff and really having to prove yourself, how do you think that benefited you compared to today's system?
Well, definitely. I owe everything that I have accomplished, everything that I've done in basketball to, you know, my upbringing in basketball and how I was raised, you know, playing ball in the street. I didn't grow up in the AAU system. Like yourself, I didn't, I didn't play organized basketball until I was about 13, 14 years old. I didn't play AAU ball until I was 17 years old. I only played one season of AAU ball. And, but before then I played on the street every day, played in the park every day. And what the streets, you know, really help to develop is you're not playing against your age group in the streets. Like, there's no age restrictions. There's no, okay, you know, this park is only 13-year-old kids are playing. This park is only 14 or 15-year-old. No, you go to the park, you could be playing against 35-year-old men. You could be, you know, playing against 18-year-olds. So for me, I always played against guys who were older than me, stronger than me, better than me. So it made me tougher. It set us a bar that I was a goal that I needed to I wanted to reach.
I think that's something that's lost in today's game is exactly what you described. When you're playing against older guys who maybe even they're not as talented as you are, but when they're bigger, stronger, faster, more mature, and you're a 13-year-old kid and you're playing against a 26-year-old adult, you've got to learn how to use your body. You've got to learn you got to learn those tricks of the trade. You got to be able to do things and shoot the ball from weird angles and make shots when somebody passes it to you, so you don't have to sit out when you want to get picked back up for the next game. Exactly. So I think that's something that kids today are missing. There's a question that I wanted to ask you ever since I kind of thought that we were going to get a chance to have you on. What is it like if you go to New York City today versus New York City when you were a kid and you were 13 years old? What does the pickup basketball scene look like in New York City today compared to what it was 20 years ago, let's say?
Oh, it's terrible. Like I mentioned earlier in the interview, they just allow anybody to get on the court and play basketball. I know I grew up in an era where, like I said, you know, if you couldn't play, you wasn't allowed to call next. You wasn't allowed to play because they didn't want to waste that time. You know, they came, they played against, you know, guys who knew how to play ball. They wanted to get a good sweat, a good run. And then when they were done playing ball, then they, you know, they let the scrubs play. But nowadays, you know, if you come to the park with a pair of sneakers and, aspirations to play, you know, you could call next and they allow you to play, whether you can play basketball or not.
Yeah, it's a totally different world. Are there still games, though, to be had? Can you still find games? Because I know around here in Cleveland, there's just not – like the places that I used to play back a long time ago, like those pickup games, at least quality pickup games, to your point, don't exist. I think you're right in that, you know, everywhere that there's not there's not the place where the really good players congregate anymore because guys are playing indoors, or, you know, when you're talking about a high school kid, they're all playing on the AAU circuit. None of those kids are on the playground. So there just isn't that opportunity to play pickup basketball the way you did when you were a kid.
Exactly. Like, well, you hit it on the head when you said, you know, these AAU kids are not playing in the street anymore. You know, they're playing in gyms. They're, you know, with their respective coaches, teams, and they're a little bit more apprehensive of, you know, playing ball because they don't want to injure themselves or, you know, break a nail or anything.
Yeah. Do you think there's any barriers? If you think back to the time when you were a kid, and if the current system was in place, you know, so much of what is done in basketball today, whether it's with, you know, all the people that have individual trainers, or whether they're playing on, you know, an AAU team. I'm not talking here about the top 100 high school players in the country who get everything paid for and flown around the country and that kind of stuff. But for your average kid who lives in New York City, you know, who maybe doesn't have the, you know, the money and the ability to travel and do those things, is it more difficult for a kid to get into the game today, do you think, than it was during the time when you were a kid?
Well, I don't know. I can't say that. It is or it isn't. I know that there is a lot of, you know, attention and hype and exposure you get for playing in the AAU circuit. But I'm definitely not, you know, gonna say that you can't get exposed not playing on the AAU circuit, because I'm a product of not playing on the AAU circuit and still getting a shot and playing in the NBA. So if you know how to play this game, like, it'll definitely open doors to giving you opportunities to, you know, showcase your skills. For me personally, my personal story is I was discovered playing on the streets of New York City.
And so you had a mentor, Rodney Parker, correct, who helped you get there. So talk a little bit about your relationship with him, how that started, and then what he was able to do to kind of guide you down the path that eventually ended you in the NBA.
Man, listen, I can't, there's not enough words to express how grateful I am of Rodney Parker, you know, no relation. You know, we have the same last name, but we're not related. But he discovered me at West 4th Street, you know, playing ball when I was about 14 years old, 15 years old, and he opened the doors to basketball, not only here in New York City for me, but he opened the doors to, you know, meeting connections with AAU teams and potentially college coaches. And, you know, he set a course for me, like, from that day forward, like, he set a course for me to get to the NBA, and all I had to do was walk in everything he said to do, and I did. You know, just to go back a little bit, you know, when I met him, he took me from not only just playing ball at West 4th Street, he took me to, okay, you know what, I know there's good run up in Harlem right now, why don't we go to Harlem and play there, and we go play there, and then another day, he'd be like, I know there's a couple good runs in Queens, so let's go play in Queens, and I would go play there. So he opened the doors to New York City basketball for me. I wasn't just, you know, local anymore. I started to, you know, play against other different competitions, other good guys, guys who had game in this part of New York, guys who had game in this part of New York. And, you know, that gave me the exposure to, you know, get to play on the AAU team that I played on, which was Aim High at the time. Kenny Smith was, you know, the ambassador of Aim High, and coach Kev Jackson was the head coach. But, you know, once I, you know, made it on the AAU circuit, then he helped me get to choose a high school that I played in. And then he helped me choose the college team that I played in. And it was just a straight line that I had to walk in, and I made it to the NBA all because of him.
So before you met him, was it just, hey, I love playing basketball, I love the game, and I'm just playing because it's what I love to do? And then he kind of gave you the blueprint and kind of get you to think about, hey, there might be something more for me in this game, where I might have an opportunity to
you know, go to college. I might have an opportunity to play professionally. Was that something that was on your radar before you met him, or did he kind of put that on your radar?
To tell you the truth, like, I always wanted to play in the NBA. I just didn't have the know-how or the knowledge on how to go about it. I was a street ball player. You know, I watched my dad play street ball. That's all I knew. My dad, you know, as good as he was, he didn't play past the high school level. So all I knew was playing in the street and, you know, watching the NBA on TV. So I didn't know about college. I didn't know about going to certain high schools. I didn't know about playing in leagues and I didn't know any of that because I didn't grow up playing in a league. I didn't grow up playing structured basketball. So I didn't have that information until I met Rodney Parker. He opened the doors to, okay, you know, there's a whole different world. There's a whole path to get into the NBA. You gotta go to camps. You gotta go to clinics. You gotta, you know, play on this team. You gotta, you know, play organized ball in this area. You have to. You know, you need college, you need school to get to the NBA. So let's pick the right school. So there was a wealth of information that he had that I wasn't exposed to before him.
So once you decided that that was the direction that you were going to go and you're under his guidance, what did the recruiting process look like for you? Obviously, you went to a JUCO first and then ended up at Fordham. But talk a little bit about when you were in high school, what that recruiting process was like for you as a kid from New York City.
Well, I didn't really have a recruiting process because I was a late bloomer. And when I say that, a late bloomer, I only played 1 year high school basketball. And so the world, so to say, didn't know who I was. The world didn't know. You know who Smush Parker was. New York City didn't even know on that level. Didn't know who Smush Parker was. I just came out of nowhere, pretty much. I hear that a lot now. People will say, you know, so you just came out of nowhere. Like, where'd you come from? You know, we had these group of guys who were classified to be the, you know, point guards in New York City, but we didn't know who you were. So there wasn't a recruiting process for me. You know, I see in the movies how, you know, you play high school ball, you know, you're getting letters from colleges, you're going on, you know, college tours and invites. And, you know, I didn't get that. I didn't go through that process. It was just, you know, I played 1 year high school basketball. I wasn't graduating on time, so I had to go the junior college route. So Rodney Parker got, you know, told me to go to CSI. He knew coaches out there. He said that was the best junior college situation to go to. So I went. After JC, he was like, you know what, let's change course and, you know, let's leave early and go to D1 and, you know, redshirt your first year. And, you know, I did that. So, the reason why I decided to go to Fordham is because Bob Hill, you know, was the head coach at the time. He coached in the NBA 15 years prior. And in my mind, I was like, who better to prepare me for the NBA besides the NBA coach? For sure. That's why I decided to go to Fordham. So I went to Fordham, redshirted my first year. Then I played 1 year, you know, at Fordham, and I wasn't even thinking about going to the NBA after my first year. I just wanted to, you know, put my name in the draft and kind of go to the combines and, you know, play against that level of competition and see what I need to work on for the next season and seeing what, you know, the NBA was looking for. So I could kind of, you know, hone my skills. And I went to these combines and I realized that a lot of those guys who were at those camps, you know, I'm not bashing anybody, but they couldn't play. So I, you know, at the time, you know, kept my name in the draft.
And so you, as you went into that process, and let's jump back for a second before we go forward. Mm-hmm. And when you were getting ready for the combine, like now, obviously today, guys do very, very specific preparation. You know, they have, you know, people that have their basketball companies that prepare guys for the, you know, the pre-draft work and all that kind of stuff. Do you remember at that time what you did? Did you do anything specific to get prepared for those combines, or was it just, hey, I'm going to go and play and show what I can do?
No. Listen, to get to that level, you don't just walk into that a combine, not having to work out and not really knowing what your skills are and, you know, and do well. You don't, that's not something that guys do. You actually have to work on your game. And for me, I put in the work. Up until that time, I had never practiced so much. I was in the gym every day. I was running 3 miles. I was running, listen, I was in the best shape of my life. I was running 6 minute miles, doing three miles under 16 minutes. Not 3 minute miles. I'm tripping. Yeah, I said 6 miles.
6 minute. Yeah, six minutes.
Six minute miles.
Sounds realistic. If you're running a 3 minute mile, you're in the wrong sports, Mush. You need to be on the track, man.
No, I was running 6 minute miles, doing 3 miles under 17 minutes. I was getting up shots and doing dribble drills, and I was doing it all. I was staying sharp. I was sharp, and
I was
hungry.
Were you working out by yourself? Did you have, you know, another player you were working out with? Did you have somebody that was a coach that was watching over you, or how were you going about doing that stuff?
Well, when I entered the draft, I had an unsigned agent at the time, and you know, my agent, unsigned agent at the time, had other clients or other guys he had, you know, that was either in the NBA already, or, you know, just fresh out of college like me. So we were all working out together. So it was about a group of five or six guys that, you know, we were all just doing individual skills work. And then, you know, we was competing against each other every day, you know, keeping each other sharp and, you know, just preparing us for, preparing ourselves, I would say, for these combines.
Registration is now open at www.headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps this summer in Strongsville, Westlake, Avon Lake, Oberlin, Brunswick, Highland Heights, Mentor, and Hudson. At Head Start Basketball, we care deeply about making a positive impact on the lives of young basketball players, both on and off the court. It's through building strong relationships with our players, parents, and coaching staff that we are able to use the game of basketball to enrich the lives of those we interact with, both inside and outside of our organization. We believe that our attention to detail, our growth mindset, and our commitment to lifelong learning allows us to help our players achieve their fullest potential. We are passionately committed to providing players, parents, and coaches with everything they need to reach their goals. These core values run through everything we do. Check out our website, www.headstartbasketball.com, and discover why you should attend a Head Start Basketball Camp this summer. Hope to see you there.
And so you expected to be drafted fairly high, and then that ended up not being the case. And I know when I listened to you know, one of the other podcasts that you were on, you talked about some of your thoughts about what may have happened in that situation. So I don't know if you want to describe what happened in that draft process, because I know you said that you could have possibly pulled your name out once you found out, but you felt like the feedback you were getting from NBA people heading into it was that, you know, you had a chance to be drafted pretty high. So can you describe kind of what happened with the draft and then how you ended up, you know, getting the chance for your first year?
Well, at the end of the day, my name didn't get called. You know, there's speculation and the story that I was led to believe, and I believe till this day, but I really don't like to, you know, get into controversial things anymore.
Understood.
Was that, you know, my college coach didn't favor me, favor that I, you know, kept my name in the draft, and he was a little upset at the process and, you know, decided to slander my name to other college coaches and a lot of hearsay stuff. So again, I don't want to go into it. My name wasn't called. That's the reality of it, or of the situation. Whether I was, you know, good enough to get drafted or not good enough to get drafted, I believe that I was still good enough to play in the NBA, and I wasn't going to allow that to, you know, dictate whether or not that I wasn't going to pursue the NBA.
So what was the next step then? When you become an undrafted free agent, then what's the thought process in terms of where you go and how you get involved in, you know, getting invited to a training camp, participating in summer league. What was kind of happening at that point? Okay.
You know what? Let me backtrack. First of all, I mean, okay, because all of this is starting to, you know, become fresh again in my mind. I actually had the opportunity to get drafted after, you know, all of, you know, it was said and done. I had the opportunity of being drafted in the second round. I don't know if you guys or everybody knows the process, but the team actually calls your agent. And, you know, I guess in the second round, they asked you, you know, what your thoughts on, you know, wanting to be drafted and X, Y, and Z. And after that, you know, wanting to be drafted by that particular team who wanted to draft me. And the reason being was because becoming a free agent, you hold all the power now. You're in control of where you can choose to go, what team you choose to work out with, and the direction you want your career to go in, instead of being tied down to an unguaranteed contract to a team that, you know, might not even, you know, sign you for the season. So
yeah, you can find the best situation for you.
Exactly. So for me, you know, after the draft, after being drafted in the second round, I sat down with my agent and we went down, you know, the entire NBA, all the teams and their rosters and, you know, guaranteed contracts and spots open. And we found the right situation for me, which team I wanted to, you know, work out for and play for. And, you know, I played in 3 summer leagues that summer. I destroyed in those summer leagues, and you know, and this is where my story begins. You know, right back, I'll be in Cleveland tomorrow, tonight actually, my clinic is tomorrow. Right back home.
Yep, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, let's jump from there, because I think your backstory is great. I want to ask you one other question before we get into what you're doing now. And
okay.
I know you played. After your career in the NBA, you played overseas in a bunch of different places. So anytime I talk to somebody who played overseas, the one question that I always have to ask is, what's your craziest overseas basketball story? Because every guy that I've ever known in my entire life who's played overseas has one story of something crazy, whether it's fans, whether it's getting paid, whether it's some kind of travel situation. What's your craziest overseas basketball story?
Okay, my craziest overseas, but I have many, but there's one that takes the cake.
All right.
Would be my Greece experience. I was playing for the Aris team in Saloniki, and we are in the Greek Cup championship game playing against Olympiakos. And I don't know if you've ever been overseas or to an overseas basketball or football game, but they have the craziest fans. And when I say crazy, you know, they're very passionate. I'm not, you know, they're very passionate.
Way to be kind. Way to be kind. I like it, man. I like it.
They're very passionate about their sports teams. And, you know, at every game, there's about 200, 300 riot cops just to control the crowd and to control the fans, because they're extremely passionate people. So for the championship, the Greek Cup championship game, you know, they couldn't mix the fans with each other. So one side of the arena was the Olympiakos fans, and the other side of the arena was our fans. And then down the middle in the arena was riot cops to kind of keep each side at bay. So I think it was the second quarter. I'm bringing the ball up, and I see a flare shoot across
nice
my head.
Nice.
Yeah. A flare shoot from one side of the court to the other into the stands. And, you know, of course, you know, a riot broke out, you know, that, you know, chanting, you know, ripping up off the chairs and throwing it onto the court. Needless to say, the game was put on hold for about an hour and a half because the riot cops had to, you know, clear the whole stadium out. And we finished the game with no fans.
Wow.
We finished the championship.
Were you able to get to the locker room before it got too crazy when that happened, or were you guys out there on the floor while the riot was going on?
Oh, no. We were out there for, you know, a lot of the time. You know, we couldn't get to we didn't get to the locker room in time. So I was witness to, you know, the fans picking up chairs and throwing it at the riot cops, and, you know, the burning of flags and the flicking of cigarette butts. And
that's crazy.
All of that. Yep.
That is crazy. Well, that's a good one. You might rank in the top five of the ones I've heard. Mm. I like that one, Smush. It's very, very good. All right. So let's jump ahead now to what you're doing with your camps and clinics and the things that you're doing there. And just tell us a little bit about kind of where the idea came from and then what you're doing and why it's so important to you.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm doing Smush Park Elite, Smush Inspires. Smush Inspires is my nonprofit. It's my community work. It's me giving back to not only the game of basketball, but just to, you know, the inner city youth, the youth that, you know, may, you know, come off as overlooked and, you know, the unprivileged, so to say. Unlike myself growing up, I didn't play tournament basketball. I didn't play on the AAU teams. I grew up playing in a recreational centers, and I just know that for me growing up, I would have enjoyed or appreciated, you know, the many New York City, you know, players that actually made it out and played pro ball, whether it was overseas or NBA. I would have appreciated if they would have came back to the community and, you know, gave me, you know, a word of inspiration, or, you know, do a basketball clinic or a camp, or show me the proper footwork to a triple threat or inside pivot, or, you know, just how to, you know, to work on my jump shot. And here I am in a position where I played professional ball 6 years in the NBA, 10 years overseas. And I see that there's a need for, you know, some community work for guys to come back and give back to the community and, you know, give some of these kids some hope, some inspiration that they too can make it out. Because, again, I wasn't one of those kids who grew up playing in the AAU circuit. I wasn't, you know, privy to playing in basketball tournaments my entire life or growing up playing on a team. I just grew up playing street ball. And there's a million kids that play basketball here in New York City every day. And I just want to walk into a park. Like it's an affection of mine for me to just walk into a park everywhere I go and, you know, just shoot hoops with the local kids. They don't even need to know who I am. I just want to go in and hang out with them and get up a couple shots if they'll walk out. And, you know, if they know who I am, then they do. If they don't, then it is what it is.
Yeah, it's awesome to be able to use the game as a vehicle to give back. I know that, you know, that's some of the things that I feel like for me as a kid, the game of basketball gave me so much. And I didn't obviously reach the same levels of success that you had, but I was able to play in college. And I just know that the game impacted me in such a way that, you know, it still is influencing me today in the things that I do. And I feel like the person that I am, you know, I attribute that to my family, but I attribute it a lot to, you know, what I learned out on the basketball court. And to your point, I think when you see somebody, if you're a kid and you see somebody who's had the type of success that you've had in the game, and not only that, but then somebody who's willing to come back and give their time and talk to kids and just spend time with them and be able to teach them some of the things both about the game of basketball and, you know, the game of life. To me, that's just something that, man, it's invaluable. If we had, you know, more guys that, you know, were doing some of the things that you're doing, you know, we could continue to make an impact on kids and really change the trajectory of their life.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So talk a little bit about what you actually do at one of your camps, clinics. You describe kind of when a kid comes in, what can they expect when they go to when they show up for the clinic tomorrow, what can a kid expect to do and to see?
Okay. Well, my objective to, you know, for these basketball camps or clinics is more than just the basketball aspect of it. You know, there's only so much that you could try to teach a kid basketball wise in one day. You know, a lot of the stuff that I go over, for me, the most important part for me, and this is why I do what I do, is the inspirational speech part, where I can, you know, kind of connect with the kids, connect with the youth, and, you know, let them ask me anything that they want. And at that moment, I, you know, kind of share and impart to them what my experiences growing up was, and, you know, how basketball, you know, was a part of my life, and what I did to, you know, be successful, and what I did, you know, that almost cost me my success. Like I'm an open book, and I try to inspire in the kids to believe in themselves, you know, no matter what their dreams are. You know, like I said, it's more than just basketball. You know, a lot of these kids that come in want to be doctors or lawyers or architects, or some of them want to be football players or baseball players. Actually, you know, I had a couple that wanted to be soccer players at my last clinic. So it's more than just basketball. You know, what they take away from my clinic is life lessons and the inspiration to, you know, to look past, you know, their, you know, hardships or their trials or their obstacles, and, you know, help them to overcome, you know, those things, because it's going to happen. Obstacles are going to happen. Hardships are going to happen. Difficulties are going to happen. You can't stop that from happening in your life. But what you can do is always believe that you will be successful, you will achieve, and that you will and can overcome.
That's a great message. And I think that too often kids, especially kids who have, you know, a difficult home life or aren't maybe as happy as they would like to be, when they can hear that message from somebody who they look up to, somebody who's had success. And again, when it's not just about the game of basketball, that's one of the big things that, you know, that I'm a believer in, is that we have to use basketball. Again, I love the game as much as anybody, but mm-hmm. we also have to use it as a way to inspire kids to become better people, become better citizens, and to improve their lives. And, you know, I think it's a credit to you, what you're doing and what you have done, to be able to reach out to the kids in the community and, mm-hmm. You know, and make an impact. And to me, that's really, you know, that's really what it's all about. Let's jump to your world record attempt that you have coming
okay.
up. It's going to be in the spring, or when? Tell me when it's going to be, and describe for what it is.
All right. So I was able to connect with John Stoltz, the creator of the Rock Basketball, and me and he had this notion to want to, you know, break a world record, and he brought me on a board to help him, you know, break this record. It's right now the record is 7,500 people dribbling a basketball at the same time simultaneously, and it's that record is being held outside of the United States, and that's mind-boggling to me, because basketball is our number one sport here in America. So Rock wanted to kind of shatter that world record. We need 8,000 people in one area to be dribbling a Rock basketball. You know, I will be present. Of course, John Stoltz will be present. Dickie V is going to be the commentator.
How many people you got signed up? How many people you got signed up so far? How close are you to what the numbers are?
I don't know what the numbers are right yet, but we definitely need all the people that we can, that are going to be a part of it, that want to be a part of it. They can contact, you know, me at smush-inspires.org. They can follow what we're doing on my Instagram pages, Smush Parker Elite or Smush Inspires. And you can find out more information on it there. But it's going to be held this September in Kingston, New York.
All right, people, it's time to make a road trip to Kingston, New York.
Yeah,
hopefully we get some people out to, you know, to help you out and break that. It'd be a lot of fun.
Yes, sir. It's gonna be a lot of fun, actually. And the participants will get their name put on a plaque, and it's gonna be a monument in the city of Kingston, New York. So your name will go on a permanent plaque and it's going to be put on a monument in the city of Kingston, New York.
That is very cool. That is very cool. Well, Shmush, I want to be respectful of your time. So if there's anything else, I know you already shared out your contact information. If there's anything that we didn't hit on today that you want to share, go ahead and do that. And then if there is any other places where people can reach out to you, go ahead and share that. And then we'll wrap things up.
Okay. Well, I said my social media pages is Smush Parker Elite, Smush Inspires. The world record, you know, is being held this September in Kingston, New York, and the proceeds will go to the V Foundation, which is Dickie V's foundation, and the Ulster County Boys and Girls and Smush Inspires Foundations. It's going to be awesome. More information can be found on what I'm doing and what the world record information will be on smush-inspires.org. Check me out. And I look forward to being in Cleveland tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, we'll put all that information in the show notes so people don't have to try to copy it down as they're listening. Okay. So, Smush, we can't thank you enough for jumping out with us here today. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our Academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have four different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.